Welcome to this special edition of the Strategy Driven Podcast, an interview with Dwayne Sparks, author of Sales Strategy from the Inside Out, How Complex Selling Really Works. On behalf of the entire Strategy Driven team, I would like to welcome you to this special edition of the Strategy Driven Podcast, an interview with Dwayne Sparks, author of Sales Strategy from the Inside Out, How Complex Selling Really Works. The Strategy Driven Podcast focuses on the tools and techniques executives and managers can use to improve their organization's alignment and accountability to ultimately achieve superior results. These podcasts elaborate on the best practice and warning flag articles found on the Strategy Driven website at www.strategydriven.com. In this special edition podcast, Dwayne Sparks, chairman and founder of the Sales Board, shares with us his insights on action selling, a method for establishing and building business relationships, enabling sales professionals to better engage their clients and understand and meet their clients' needs, resulting in greater client value and increased sales. So now, without any further delays, let's get started. We are privileged to be joined by Dwayne Sparks, author of Sales Strategy from the Inside Out, How Complex Selling Really Works, and chairman and founder of the Sales Board, an organization of sales management and training professionals who teach the critical selling skills that have the greatest impact on gaining customer commitment. For more than two decades, Dwayne and his organization have trained sales professionals in the use of his unique action selling method, certifying over 350,000 salespeople in more than 3,000 organizations. These individuals and their companies have subsequently realized a dramatic increase in sales, resulting in six times the revenue increase of similar firms. Dwayne, welcome back to the Strategy Driven Podcast.
Well, thank you, Nathan, and welcome back to you. This is our fifth conversation like this, and I'm so excited to talk with you again.
Sales Strategy is probably my favorite of all the five books. Of course, they're all business novels, and I love business novels, as I know you've heard me say many times before. But what I really like about this book is how you put us into the minds and thoughts of each of the buyers and the consultative salespeople throughout the whole process. It really helped me see and better understand the action selling method. So I love this book. This is my personal favorite.
Thank you, Nathan. What I was attempting to do here is, you know, the title is Sales Strategies from the Inside Out. So the inside is getting inside the heads of both buyers and sellers. And in doing that, I was able to do a little more character development than I normally do with my business books. But it was really focused on what's going on in their heads as this sales process is being orchestrated. So you'll hear from six different people in this book, and they will tell the story of a sale, the same sale, with six different angles. So each of them is a different level in their companies. There's three on the buyer's side and three on the seller's side, a salesperson, a sales executive, and then a CEO on the seller's side. And on the buyer's side, you have, a buyer-type person, and then a mid-level manager person, and then a CEO from that organization. And Each is talking about how this sale happens. And I think it's probably my most creative work and probably the most fun book that I've ever written. So I think the feedback I've gotten has been fantastic, and I appreciate hearing from you that you like the book as well.
Yeah, this is a truly fantastic book. I really enjoyed it, and it's the one I go back to over and over again because it helps me see how to execute the sales process in my own line of work, which since it is consulting, naturally, I think, follows the action selling process and the consultative sales. But as I have admitted before, too often I fall out of that consultative selling process, the action selling process, and I fall into all the traps all the time. So I'm still a work in progress, as it were.
That's fine. We all are.
Well, Dwayne, since this is the fifth in the series, I thought maybe just to start out with today, we could do a little bit of a recap for our audience. And that recap, if you wouldn't mind, would just be to talk briefly about the five individual purchase decisions that our clients go through when they make that ultimate buying choice.
Okay, Nathan. There are a series of five decisions that customers make as they're making a major purchase decision. And the interesting thing about these, well, number one, there's five of them. And number two, they're made in a predetermined sequence. And the third thing that I'd like to point out about that is that when sellers help customers make these five decisions and they help them make them in the right sequence, we are far more successful than if they get made out of sequence. So here's the five decisions.
Mm-hmm.
The first decision is about the salesperson. Do I like this person? Do I trust this person? Does this person have my interests in mind? The second buying decision is about the company that that person represents. Are they a good match for me or my company? The third buying decision is about the product. Does it fill my needs? Does it provide a solution to problems or opportunities that I have?
Mm-hmm.
The fourth buying decision is the price decision. Is it a good value? Is it competitively priced? Is it in a range of where the value is equal to the investment? And the fifth decision is the time to buy. When should I move forward? Should I stall? The important thing to understand about these decisions is that when they're made out of sequence or when the salesperson does not help the customer make these in the proper order, bad things can happen. As an example, I'm sure you've found yourself in situations where the customer might inquire about your product or your price before you've had a good opportunity to understand their situation and how your product might be a solution to some needs that they might have.
Mm-hmm.
When the price gets quoted too soon, we haven't done a very good job of selling ourselves. We haven't done a very good job of selling our company. And we haven't done a very good job of positioning our product as a solution. So price decision becomes a huge part of the equation. But on the other hand, if a salesperson does a very good job of selling his or herself, showing that they are interested in serving the customer and they have made a good connection with that customer, and they have done a detailed analysis of their needs, and then they presented their company and their product as solutions to those needs, the price decision becomes smaller.
Mm-hmm.
It's of less of importance than when the salesperson does not do a good job of selling in the right sequence, salesperson, company, product, price, and then time to buy. So that's a review.
Great. Thank you. I went through sales strategy again, there were a few aspects of the book that I hoped we could focus on during this discussion that, while they appeared in some of the other books, I thought that they were really very prevalent in sales strategy. The first one of those is what I would maybe suggest or would call a team approach to the consultative sales process. In that, in sales strategy, we had a salesperson bring in another member of their organization to help with the sales process. I was wondering if you might talk to us a little bit about why that might be done, and then how that should be properly done in the action selling process.
Okay. I'll take the how first.
Mm-hmm.
There's several really good answers to your question. And there's several really good reasons why you'd want to involve your teammates. You know, today, more than ever, selling is a team sport. And my opinion is that the day of the single-handed gunslinger that goes out there and just knocks them dead, those days are over. Mm-hmm. We have to be orchestrators of sales resources today, which means we have to be, you know, very versatile in how we orchestrate using our teammates. And your teammates, you know, these are some of those resources that salespeople have available to them. So we can use them to get to higher levels in the client company. So we will match our VP with their VP, as an example, or our president with their president. So we can move up the chain of command using the resources we have in our company. Mm-hmm. We can use those resources to explain technical details or to help in a problem-solving mode when we bring in some specialists to help focus on in challenges that customers are facing. We can help deepen relationships with our bringing our teammates in and having them meet with your company contacts. And I think a very effective way to accomplish Act 5 is done by using your teammates. And Nathan, you remember what Act 5 is, don't you?
Oh, Act 5 is sell the company.
Exactly. Yep. When we bring our fellow teammates in, we are effectively selling our company by showing that we have depth in our resources and we have more capability to bring to bear on customer challenges and opportunities that exist.
Okay. Now, say I'm the vice president of sales for my organization, and I'm trying to convince my folks or to teach them to use the action selling process, and in this case, the team approach. And I get some resistance because they're viewing it as a, say, maybe a loss of commission. Now they have to share with others. What might I highlight to them as being the what's in it for me benefit that they should consider when using the approach?
All right, that's a great question. And I think, you know, there are several benefits and there are some risks. And if all of your teammates are trained on a common selling method like action selling, you really have no risk. But I think companies today are becoming very smart about the need for a sales approach and a need for a consistent sales approach across the company. So in many cases, we are training not just sales forces. We're training executive-level management because they are beginning to participate more and more in sales efforts.
Okay.
We're training marketing departments. We're training customer service departments. We're training technical departments, people that have contact with the customer. And what we want to do is form teams of people that can make calls and make them consistently the right way. So in those situations, I really don't see any risk. I see only opportunity when salespeople bring in their well-trained teammates. The benefits of doing that are many. You showcase a much stronger and deeper solution when your teammates are with you.
Mm-hmm.
You can increase your account penetration by adding new contacts. So you bring in your people and they bring in theirs, and you just deepen the relationship and make it a broader relationship, covering more of your customer, increasing the number of contacts that you have.
Yes.
You can also, Nathan, identify new opportunities or applications for your product when you bring these additional people in. They will see things. You know, two heads are always better than one, and they will see things that you may not be seeing. So people like product specialists will identify opportunities that you may not have been aware of. It's all good if you have a common selling method, like an action selling working for you. So I don't see risk. I see only opportunity when you do it that way.
Sure. Okay. Dwayne, shifting gears to a little different topic, and this topic is all about understanding the client needs, which I know we've talked about in depth in our other podcasts and we've mentioned earlier today. In sales strategy, you had two teams. There was the Go Team Unlimited, and they were the selling team or the provider. And then there was the Amstad companies, and they were, in the story, the purchasers. By my count, as I read sales strategy, there was three or four significant meetings between these two teams as the Go Team Unlimited sales team gained an understanding of and an appreciation for the challenges that Amstad was facing. Again, we've talked a lot about the need to first understand the client's need prior to presenting a solution. What I was wondering was, how does one determine the right number of interactions, the right amount of time to spend to gather that needs understanding before presenting a solution to balance the client's desire to have a solution and their sense that they have invested a significant amount of time in communicating with you what their need is?
Okay. In complex selling situations, and that's what we're talking about with the Go Team and Amstad company example, complex. There's multiple buyers involved in the ultimate decision of what to do. The key is to have the strongest solution based on, you know, a terrific needs assessment that occurs. Then presenting that solution to the right people at the right time.
Mm-hmm.
All of us have ideal sales cycles, or we've identified, well, at least most all of us have, we've identified the number of interactions that it should take in an ideal situation. But we have to, you know, combine that with what we learn by asking all the questions on the action selling questions map, and I'll refresh you on that.
Mm-hmm.
The questions map, we cover categories, not more than understanding needs, but also understanding company issues that might exist, personal issues that might be impacting the players that you're talking with, money issues like budget, competition, you know, where are you at in the competition that you're working against, the time frame, you know, what levels of urgency exist to, you know, have things improved or make a decision so they do get improved,
mm-hmm.
And all kinds of, you know, buying influence situations, understanding who makes decisions, who impacts decisions, who's affected by decisions, you know, and how are they made in this particular client situation. So when you cover the map and you ask all of these categories of questions and you gain the information necessary, you'll be able to determine the steps that are required in your sales process to move from where you're at to conclusion in making a sale.
Mm-hmm.
So the answer to your question, Nathan, is it depends, and it depends on first, you know, what an ideal sell cycle looks like for your company, combined with you know, the information that you uncover when you're asking the best questions and understanding the situation, the needs, the time frame, the competition, et cetera. You know, it's complex. We call it complex because it is.
Mm-hmm.
But once we know all of that information, it's far less complex. When salespeople are not, and I think the biggest mistake that gets made,
mm-hmm.
we don't ask the right questions, and therefore we don't position everything exactly right, and we don't talk to the right people at the right time. And it's all about gathering enough information so we can make good strategic decisions about when and how we move things forward.
Okay.
I hope that answered your question.
That does. And it's a great segue into my next question with talking to the right people to affect a decision. In sales strategy, the Go Team Unlimited sales team worked through the needs analysis and presented their ultimate solution or dry run the presentation of the ultimate solution with AMSTAD's Vice President of Business Development and Sales Support Manager. It appeared, though, that in order for the Vice President of Business Development to move forward with the solution, that he was going to need the buy-in, I guess I'd call it, of the CEO and other executives within the company. And I was left with the impression that after this dry run, there would be a presentation to the executive team as a whole, and that that presentation would come from, or at least be greatly orchestrated, by the Vice President of Business Development. It felt, or I think some people might feel, that that relinquishes a great deal of control over that final closure of the sale, and it would feel risky to them. I was wondering if you might talk a bit about what the benefit of using that kind of approach is in having the executive inside the client company actually selling the product or service.
Okay. It's a great question. And I think that we have to take a look at how we define control. And mm-hmm. Just let me explain first. Both sellers, the VP and the salesperson, were involved in making the key calls in the scenario in this strategic action selling book.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there was one call where it was a CEO to CEO call, and it was a one-on-one. Now, that call was not the detailed problem solution type call. It was at a very high level. And really, the CEO's touched base to, just have an understanding that there was a proposal that's going to be made and that all of the right people were being involved. And the CEO of the seller's company made the CEO of the buyer's company feel comfortable that good people were on the job and they were working hard and they had some great ideas and that the proposal was going to be a very strong solution. So they didn't get into details. It was a high level.
Mm-hmm.
The rest of the calls, the salesperson, I'll call it orchestrated, by playing her cards at the right time with the right people. Now, I don't think she lost control. She led the symphony.
Okay.
And she used her resources to continually move the sale forward. Now, even though she didn't, play the instrument, she wasn't blowing the horn and beating the drum, she maintained control.
Mm-hmm.
Her control was orchestration versus actually doing all the work. I think this is still a level of control. I think this is still the right kind of way to control selling situations, is if you function more like the band leader, the orchestrator, you tell the trumpets when to toot and the horns when to blow and the violins when to, do their thing.
Mm-hmm.
So that's more along the lines of what we are advocating in strategic action selling,
mm-hmm.
is that salespeople take on this orchestrator role and become the director of the events that happen in selling situations.
Okay, sure. You know, and as you were walking us through that illustration too, I reflect back on a lot of my work, and it's not only through the sales process, but even in delivering the services themselves, I find that when we've collaborated around the need and I can help orchestrate and guide the presentations, I'm not the one that has to stand up in front of an executive team. I've helped orchestrate my client counterparts and my partners in this to do it. And it always sells far better, and it goes far better because it's one of them, one of the client team members who's very trusted, very credible within the organization, making this presentation. And I have much greater success than if it's just me up there, where I might have some perception of somebody who's outside the company that might have some other agenda.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, Dwayne, kind of coming along with that, I did want to ask if you might talk us through what two of the acts of action selling might look like in this case. And that's how acts 7 and 8, which are ask for commitment and confirm the sale, might look if we're having this presentation that we're orchestrating, but maybe not the person that's actually doing the talking, the instrument or the instrument player, as it would be.
Okay, I'm in the Strategic Action Selling book. I left Act 7 and Act 8 on those. That part of the story is untold.
Mm-hmm.
And I did this for a particular reason. It's the same reason why I don't use the term close. I don't like the term. To me, it indicates that something is ending. The door is closing and it's over. That's not what selling is like today. Each interaction that we have with the customer results in gaining commitment or a close. And that close or that commitment leads to the next event, and that next event will have another commitment that is gained, and so on and so on. So I don't like to use that term, and I left it out of this book because I wanted to help the reader understand that this is a continuum. This is how relationships continue, and this is how commitments grow and grow. The end of the story, the salesperson, Terry, I think her manager, the vice president, is talking, and it goes something like this. Action selling teaches that a sale is made or lost before the final product presentation begins. It's a different way of thinking about it.
Mm-hmm.
It's happening before the product presentation begins. Hempstead's, they were a classic case in point. They sold themselves very well. They sold their company and they sold their product very, very well. The clients, you don't know yet the details of the solution before this book ends.
Right.
For that matter, we don't know every detail ourselves, since Nancy and Victor, the buyers, they'll be helping us fine-tune it. So here we've got a relationship where both the buyer and the seller are collaborating on the solution. So the sale has happened already before this final presentation has been made. So it's anticlimactic. That's the reason I left it out of the book. I think the final words in the chapter that where the VP of sales from the seller side is talking,
mm-hmm.
he says, well, I think we're going to get a sale here, and I think that Carrie is going to have a big paycheck. You tell me.
Oh.
So I've left it to the reader to decide how this was going to play out. And I think we all know.
Yeah.
Because everything else went so well as we went through our sales process, we took all the pressure off of that final meeting. It wasn't the pressure packed presentation that we find ourselves in many times, because it was more we were so together on walking our customers through this decision process, and they were helping us along the way because they were buying us as people and buying us a company and buying our product. That was happening throughout the entire process, not just the final day. So that's why Act 7 and 8, ask for commitment and confirm the sale, were left out of this book, and that's why you had that question.
Okay. Okay. Well, thank you. And thank you for sharing your time today with us and your insights on consultative selling. Not just today, but throughout the entire series. Our audience already knows that I thoroughly enjoyed Sales Strategy from the inside out. And in particular, I really appreciated how you put us right square in the middle of the minds of both the buying and the selling executives and managers so that we could get a firsthand perspective of the purchase decisions that they were making and the execution of the action selling process from the various perspectives, as you mentioned, all six of the key players in this particular process. I would hope that our audience has enjoyed the entire five-part series. I highly recommend not only that they go out and pick up a copy of Sales Strategy, which they can get from your website, but I hope they pick up a copy of the entire series because it's just invaluable as a full collection to having the depth of understanding, the richness of understanding of the entire action selling process. So, Dwayne, thank you again for joining us today and for joining us for all five of these podcasts.
Well, thank you for having me, Nathan. It's been a pleasure, and I've enjoyed each one of our podcasts together. And to your listeners, thank you for joining us, and I look forward to hearing from you or working with you sometime in the future.
Thank you for joining us. We hope you enjoyed this special edition of the Strategy Driven Podcast. I would like to personally thank Dwayne Sparks for being with us today and sharing his insights on consultative selling. As always, we would appreciate receiving your feedback by email at podcast@strategydriven.com. If you enjoyed the show, please consider voting for us on Podcast Alley and visiting our website at www.strategydriven.com. You can find more information about Dwayne Sparks and Sales Strategy from the Inside Out at www.actionselling.com and www.thesalesboard.com. Until next time, so long.